Welcome back, everybody, to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media that is hosted by me, Jared Morris, and Damian Farnworth, Copyblogger's chief copywriter. The Lead is brought to you by Authority Rainmaker, which is our second in-person live conference that we are holding in May of this year, May 13th through 15th, in beautiful Denver, Colorado, at the stunning Ellie Calkins Opera House. And I can't wait. I loved our conference last year, Authority Intensive, as did many of you. And I'm really, really looking forward to this year's conference. The lineup of keynote speakers is unbelievable, with Henry Rollins and Sally Hogshead and Chris Brogan and Dan Pink. And then the rest of the lineup of speakers is just incredible. It's a list that I am quite honored to be on. I'm really looking forward to speaking there. But even more than that, you know, just really looking forward to the chance to being able to connect with so many people in the Copyblogger audience. That was my favorite part about the conference last year. You know, for a lot of people that I talked to, that was their favorite part as well, to be able to make those personal connections and just, you know, talk with other people who are out there doing content marketing. You know, be able to swap stories and share tips and talk about what's working and what's not working, and then create those connections so that you can help each other out all throughout the year. When you have a question, or, you know, if you're looking for someone to work with, that is such a valuable part of conferences like these. So, you know, if any of that is interesting to you, I really urge you to come to our conference. Again, it's Authority Rainmaker. It's May 13th through the 15th in Denver, Colorado. Go to authorityrainmaker.com for details. And if you have any questions, just send me a tweet at Jared Morris. Be happy to share any of the details with you and just share some of my experience from last year. And this one will be even bigger and better than last year's was. So hope to see a lot of you there. All right. Well, if you listen to our last episode of The Lead, it was called How to Learn from Your Mistakes. And Damian and I really got a little more personal, and we shared some of our biggest, not necessarily biggest, but some important professional mistakes that we've made and how we learned from them, right? What lessons we took from them, and really what kind of mindset is important to have so that you can learn from your mistakes, so that you can be better the next time. And today is the flip side of that. And we're going to talk about some successes. And we're going to talk about some moments when we experienced professional success and what we learned from it, so that hopefully the next time we were able to build on that success and continue moving forward. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Damian Farnworth talking about how to learn from your success. Hey there, Damian. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jared. Recovering. For sure, recovering. So,
recovering from the meeting in Dallas.
Yeah, from the meeting from Dallas, and we had people staying with us for the last couple of days too. So, a full house, like two full sized families in the same space for quite some time. So, grateful to be back to have seen you guys in Dallas, and that was a lot of fun. Of course, I think Tony Clark said it best. It was a pretty intense 2 days.
It was. I mean, it always is when we get together, and it was an intense drive to the airport too, which I'll just tease out there. I don't know if we'll ever actually bring it and publish it as a real episode of The Lead, but we did bring the recorder and did record kind of a live in-person episode of The Lead. So we'll see.
It'll be interesting if that comes out, because I talked Jared into taking me down to, because we were in Dallas, and then my son asked, he wanted to see the gargantuan Cowboys football stadium, and Jared, since he lives down there, had a car, so he said, "I'll absolutely take you down there." So we went, and so it was a lot of fun. But maybe that might work.
We'll see. Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I was, I'd be a little nervous putting that out there, just because it's different than what we've done. Because the conversation we had was really good,
right?
And maybe that's natural. You know, as you kind of bust out of your comfort zones, you're a little bit nervous about trying something new. And frankly, that's how I felt about this two-part series, which started last week, where we talked about some of our failures and what we've learned from them, and you know, the episode was titled How to Learn from Your Mistakes.
Right.
And today we're doing the second edition of that series, which is How to Learn from Your Successes. But I have to admit, I was a little nervous to put the mistakes one out there, just because, you know, I wasn't quite sure how people would respond, if people would think that it was kind of irrelevant, you know, to what we're doing. But the response was great. So thank you to everyone for that. And it just goes to show you that, you know, sometimes you don't know, and you just got to put something out there and and, you know, trust that the audience will get the use from it if you put something useful together.
Yeah. I think people, I saw the same thing, the sort of traction that we got on that episode. And I think a lot of people enjoy seeing other people being vulnerable and talking about their weakness and their failures, and reminds them, hey, I'm not alone. You know, I'm not such a moron as I think, like to think that I am. So, and so anyway, for those of you who are listening to this, if you would be interested in actually hearing our off-the-cuff football Roadbender episode, give us a holler and let us know.
Yeah, let us know, and maybe we will put that one together and put it out
there. Figure out something to do with it, right?
Yes. But for today, now we get to beat our chests, Damien. Mm-hmm. In our last episode, we had to admit failures, like forgetting to plug in the microphone. And by the way, I did check. We are plugged in here. But in this episode, we talk about some successes. And I think, of course, it's important to learn from your mistakes, and that gets talked about often. You know, you make a mistake, learn from it, don't do it again. But I think there's a lot of value in learning from your successes, too. And sometimes we don't talk about that as much. And so I think this will be interesting, I think, just to highlight a few times when we were successful and what we learned from that, because obviously you want to build on successes and multiply them. And I think you do that by making sure that you understand why you were successful doing something so that you can replicate that again in the future. So since I went first last time, Damien, I will turn the floor over to you first this time. So what is the first success that you want to highlight, and then tell us what you learned from it?
So I just want to be clear here. We're talking about professional successes, right?
Yes, professional successes.
Okay. So I guess the biggest personal success would be convincing my wife to marry me.
Yes.
Other one would be continuing to convince her, at least persuade her, to stay married. Okay, so
We could do a whole podcast series on that.
Right. Maybe that'll be a side project. Marriage advice from the Wolverine and our Lord and Savior.
That'd be awesome.
So, yeah, so this is a hard one. And I don't know about you. Like, mistakes are easy to find, right? Because they seem just sort of everywhere. And like you said, this is our chance to beat our chests. And I don't know about you, but I'm, you know, I like to win and I like successes, but I'm not, you know, like celebrating them, it doesn't come easy to me, right? So I had to kind of sit back and think through this. So the first one I want to talk about was the native advertising survey. And the reason I think that was a success, because I'd never done a survey of that, you know, size before with the size of audience that we had. And then, to see, you know, and so I'd never done it before. And so, you know, of course, you know, working for Copyblogger, we all have the, you know, do-it-yourself work ethic. So it's like we could have hired somebody to do the survey for us, but that would have just been like, wouldn't have made too much sense, you know, with our DIY ethic. So having to kind of, you know, figure out what I need to do, you know, I got some help from Jessica Cummins, you know, on the back end on how to use Gravity Forms for the survey to set it up, how to ask the questions and set the type of responses. Then, of course, I say that it's a success because not only did I finish it, we get it rolled out, and of course, I had a lot of help from you guys too. And there's a lot of support people behind there. But then, you know, it actually, we got just a ton of responses, like, you know, over 2,300, I think close to 2,400 responses, which is just huge in a sense of getting surveys. And so I viewed that as a great success.
Yeah, you know, and I think the other big takeaway from that is just how, you know, how a lot of times our successes, they're not just ours, right? Even if we're kind of the point person for them, you know, like your name went on that. But there are so many people that had to contribute to a success like that, you know, which you mentioned. It was really, I mean, it was a true team effort. You led the team effort, but it required the contributions of so many people.
And so I guess that's the other reason that I had such a hard time with these successes was that, in fact, you know, unless it's an article that I wrote by myself, most of my successes, it's a team effort. You know, there's teamwork behind it, and there's other people behind it supporting it. So it's kind of hard, you know, if I say this was my success, I don't want to hoard, you know, hoard the attention or the credit. And but, you know, in that case, by all means, you know, point to the people who've helped in that situation.
So speaking of team successes, one of our biggest team successes last year at Copyblogger was Authority Intensive, the conference that we put on in Denver in May. And you heard me mention at the beginning of the show in the intro, Authority Rainmaker, which is our conference. It's the second conference that we're doing this May coming up. Go to authorityrainmaker.com for the details. But, you know, as I was coming up with, you know, which successes I wanted to talk about, my presentation authority intensive came to mind. And the reason why is, you know, it was only a 10-minute presentation. It was part of a panel.
Right.
And frankly, you know, there are so many ways I look back on that presentation and I see so many different ways that it could be better. You know, my slides weren't very good. You know, it really was about a 45-minute presentation for 10 minutes. I couldn't really get into any depth with it, with what I wanted to. And so it really was flawed in so many ways. But I got a lot of good feedback from it afterwards. And I think the reason why the feedback was good is simply because despite all of the issues that it had, I was able – my natural enthusiasm and passion for the topic – came through. And so I think the general kind of big picture point, you know, this the importance of servant leadership and, you know, in a few key ways how you can do it in your own life, you know, that came through, the passion, the enthusiasm came through. And so I, you know, overall, based on the response that I got from people, I considered it a success, even though internally there's so many ways I thought that it was a failure, but I considered it a success. And I guess the lesson that it taught me really is that if you're going to do anything, make sure that you do it with passion and enthusiasm. Because if you have those two things, it can be flawed in a lot of other ways. And that's not to say that you want to accept the flaws. You want to get better at those, right? That's almost kind of pointing back to learning from your mistakes. But you know, if it's got passion and enthusiasm, it can make up for so much else. You know, so make sure that you have that. And I think that'll just, it'll, you'll go so far if you have those two elements.
Yeah, I have to agree. So like talking about passion and enthusiasm, my second success thinking about this, and of course, I'm just sort of choosing, you know, some of the most recent ones in my life. But, you know, the second one that I'm going to talk about is working for myself. And not so much working for myself because I only lasted for about 18 months, you know, and about 8 months in, I realized that I do not want to do this for the rest of my life, and then spent like the next 10 months looking for, you know, a full-time job with the company. But I am proud of myself in the sense that I actually did it, because I don't know if I know you know the story, but maybe a lot of our listeners don't. But, you know, I quit my corporate job without, you know, a plan in place. There was no plan A. There was no plan B. There was simply, I've been here too long and I need to leave. And just being who I am, you know, unless I'm backed into a corner, I'm not going to put up much of a fight, right? So, and that was sort of the case. I knew that I needed to get out of there, and I knew that I needed to throw myself kind of into desperate circumstances to do that. And so I did it, and it was scary, and I don't recommend it to anybody. But so I guess in some sense, you know, I'm proud of myself, because that event, though, sort of changed the course of my professional life. And I'll talk about that on our third success. But so now I want to transition to you in your second success, Jared.
Well, if you don't mind, I want to answer a follow-up and or ask a follow-up. And I guess you can tell me if this needs to go in the third section. But, you know, so you transitioned to working for yourself. Obviously, you did. I'm sure you made a lot of mistakes along the way. But if someone were telling you, hey, I'm going to do this, so I'm not going to heed your, you know, as you said, you don't recommend it to anybody. But if someone said they were going to do it anyway, what lessons did you learn, I guess, that you could teach them? You know, like maybe, you know, what did you do right? What were some things that you did wrong to kind of, in terms of setting yourself up for success?
So relax. I would just say relax. And, you know, that experience taught me a lot. And like now I can answer a lot of people's questions who ask, like, how much do I charge? And like, how do I get clients? And, you know, I learned all those things. So someone who says, okay, I'm quitting my job now, I have no plan in place, I'm just going to work for myself. I did have, you know, I was able to replace like a third of my income with, you know, almost immediately because of contacts that I had. So, but, you know, advice to those people out there who are, you know, in that sort of desperate situation is tap into your net, you know, relax and just tap into your network and start, you know, start calling up some of those favors that you've done in the past. And you're just asking people, being bold and being blunt with people, and just saying, hey, listen, I'm working for myself now. Do you know anybody who might have any work for me? And you have to be very forceful and you have to be very deliberate with that. So that's the advice I would give them. And just, you know, relax and, you know, just keep on putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. Okay, so my second success. As a lifetime sports fan and former sports blogger, I certainly consider it a success to have been on the show Outside the Lines on ESPN. It was always one of my favorite shows. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I actually got to go on that show, I will always consider a success. But, you know, the details of how I ended up there are somewhat interesting, and I think they can teach us a lot that is instructive for our careers as online content creators. So it was, you know, when I was doing Midwest Sports Fans, right, which was really my first foray into blogging, and, you know, things were pretty quiet for, I don't know, 5-6 months, I guess. I'm not exactly sure how long I'd had the site up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was me and some friends and writing sports articles, and I never really did it to – I never really thought about a career in blogging necessarily. It was really more just to have my own WordPress site to get my hands dirty and learn about all this stuff.
Right.
So anyway, so one day I wrote this post about a baseball player named Raul Ibanez who is having a great start to his season, and someone in my fantasy baseball league had mentioned, hey, you know, maybe he's on steroids or something. And so I decided to write the post to disprove it, you know, and kind of did all these statistical analyses thinking, okay, I'll find some other reason, like he had gone to a home run friendly park or this, that, or the other. Right. And the ultimate conclusion was, well, you know, I guess I don't think he's on steroids, but you can't really disprove it. And since all these other guys have been on steroids before in baseball, you know, I guess we all just have to live with our suspicion, right? It wasn't calling him out. It was more saying this is just Major League Baseball's problem.
Right.
Anyway, one thing leads to another, and the post ends up getting to him, like to the player, and someone asked him about it in the locker room. I'm sure they didn't read the post. They're probably just like, hey, did you hear some blogger accuse you of using steroids? And he just goes off, and he's, you know, talking about how he'll give a stool sample and this little twerp in his mom's basement. What, you know, where does he get off saying all this stuff? And it just, I mean, it was just this mushroom cloud over 48 hours that ends up with me going on Outside the Lines to defend myself. Nice. And I basically got, you know, kind of railroaded by a couple of writers who were on there who I've talked to since, and everything's cool. It was one of those where the headline was kind of inflammatory, more inflammatory than the post. So that was the first lesson I learned from that, is most people are only going to read your headline. So you can either get upset about that or just understand that that's how a lot of these things go, especially when it comes to viral content. So make sure you're okay with that. But, you know, the real lesson that it taught me is that experience brought a lot of notoriety to the site. I mean, traffic was crazy. People actually knew who I was. Mm-hmm. It was a lot easier for me then to, you know, kind of submit a link to something else to a big site and actually have people respond to me. And it did a lot of good in that sense. But what it really taught me is that attention isn't really that important. I mean, it is important, but it's not the most important thing. Influence and authority are the most important things.
Right.
Because ultimately, when I woke up the next day, it was great that this one post had done well, but then it's about, okay, you know, what's coming next and what's coming next. And if you can take attention and turn it into influence and authority, and people come and they like what you have to say, and so, you know, you get them to become a member of your audience and come back, that's all great. But, you know, attention in and of itself doesn't mean that much, because what's really funny is that there were two other posts by other bloggers that were about the same stature as mine at the time that were about the very same topic that had come out a few weeks earlier. But those just kind of, you know, just kind of fell off into the internet abyss. No one really paid any attention to those. Mine, for some reason, just happened to get in front of the right person and, again, led all the way to Outside the line. So there's a certain amount of that viralness online, if you don't have a name already, that's kind of like winning the lottery.
Right.
And so, you know, yes, you want to be ready to capitalize on that when it happens, but you also don't want to put too much stock into it. Like, it didn't make me that much more qualified just because I went on Outside the Lines. I just happened to get kind of this opportunity, and then it was all about what are you going to do with it from there. So, and you've written about that too. You know, you've written about, you know, how attention is somewhat overrated, you know, because what it's really about is obviously doing something with that attention and building something that lasts.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm definitely not one to shy away from it, but I think we have to look at it with a level head. So you've been on TV, man. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Now, one time, and I think the guy who wrote about it for Deadspin said you know, we wonder if poor Jared Morris has ever been outside and seen the sun. It was something like that. We'll put it in the show notes. But I didn't have any makeup, so I looked real pasty and white on television.
You were the twerp in his mom's basement, right?
I know.
Right?
I know. Unfortunately, okay. I fit the stereotype a little bit too much in that appearance. But yeah, it was a crazy few days. That's
all right. I bet. Yeah, like you said, that sort of whirlwind. A whirlwind activity that can bring you is pretty phenomenal. So
yes.
So the sort of attention that I like to get, right, deals with getting in front of the right people, and that leads into, you know, my third success, as I kind of alluded to. If I had not quit my job and sort of just flung myself out into the freelance world. And, you know, which then changed the trajectory of my career, I would have not have gotten in front of Brian Clark. Right? So I knew Brian Clark, but and, you know, I had written for him in the past, written for his blog in the past. And I remember clearly when he started first blogging on CopyBlogger, because, you know, he and I both kind of grew up in the same direct response copywriting world, where it was sort of like the people who were behind it were either really cheesy or just dry and boring and lame. And so he comes on the scene and he's, you know, writing about the same stuff they are, but he's, you know, has punk rock references and, you know, speaking about Depeche Mode. And so immediately drawn to him. But, you know, once I became a freelancer, I knew that I had to continue to write for CopyBlogger, and I was able to do that. And so ultimately, what all this sort of, you know, drove down to, you know, I wrote a number of very successful articles for CopyBlogger. Brian, you know, brought me on contract, and ultimately he hired me on full time, and that was the success that I won. It's like working for a company like CopyBlogger, this is like hands down. I'm not just saying this to, you know, sort of rub my nose in Brian's rear or anything like that, but it's a great job. It's probably the best job that I've ever had, because of just a number of things that I get to work on, the projects that I get to do, you know, and the autonomy that I have, and the creativity that I get to express, and the people that I get to work with are all just incredibly great people. So I consider being hired and working for CopyBlogger to be, you know, the greatest professional success I've had to date.
I would echo everything that you said about working for CopyBlogger, because it is all of those things. And actually, it's a good segue. You know, it's funny, we didn't actually plan these out. Like, I didn't know what successes you were going to talk about. You didn't know mine. And it's funny how they've kind of transitioned really well into each other.
Good.
So my third one, and Brian Clark's going to be involved in mine as well. And it was really, you know, when I first came over to CopyBlogger, I was working in support, and
right,
ultimately ended up, you know, coming over into editorial and became director of content. And then after that was promoted to VP of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the challenges with success, I think, is that sometimes we don't necessarily feel worthy of our success. And,
right,
and when that happens, it can really create some internal strife. And
when you say internal, you mean like internal in you?
Yeah, internal, right. Internal in you, especially if you kind of get that imposter syndrome at all, where it's like, man, you know, like, I'm in this position. I don't necessarily know if I'm qualified for it. I don't know if I'm doing it right. And I had a lot of those feelings, mm-hmm, when I got both of those promotions, because for some reason, I really was focusing on the things I couldn't do as opposed to what I could do, right? So,
right.
You know, I when I come into editorial and you know, I'm in these positions, you know, I start comparing myself to Brian and to Sonia and to you and your guys' background in writing and your business backgrounds and, you
right,
know, like, you know, you with your copywriting background, just your extensive
right
knowledge. And all I could think about was, man, I don't have any of that, you know? And so
yeah,
I got so caught up in things that I didn't have that I think it affected a little bit my confidence to go out and do my job as well as I could. I mean, certainly my effort was there and, you know,
right,
and all of those things. But I think I was held back a little bit by just these nagging thoughts of, you know, I've got to do something super special to prove that I'm worthy of this position. But the thing was, the people whose opinion mattered trusted me with the position and kept trusting me with more responsibility.
Right.
And yet, instead of trusting that, you know, I'm questioning myself. And
yeah,
it really, you know, it took me really about a year, I think, to get comfortable and say, you know what, they gave me this position for a reason. And it's, you know, no, I don't have XYZ, but guess what? I do 1, 2, 3. You know, I like getting up and presenting in front of people, which, you know, other people in editorial don't like doing. So there are there are unique things I bring to the table.
Exactly.
And I need to think about those, you know, and I need to think about the things I can do. Yes, focus on the limitations because you want to improve those and get better at them, but not to the point where you obscure the reasons why you were successful in the first place, because that can that can make it harder for you to get to the next level of success. You know, you want to build on it, and sometimes if you allow yourself to get that imposter syndrome or question yourself, it can be hard to do that. So that was the big lesson I learned from that whole experience.
Yeah, and I think the other lesson too is for us to recognize, you know, that we should bring in people who they don't necessarily have to have the credentials, but at least we have the faith in them to get the job done. Because if you think about it, everybody who works for Copyblogger and the way they've sort of attracted talent, like none of them, I mean, they all had great, you know, sort of track records. But, you know, I mean, we were all asked to do things that was sort of above, you know, our pay grade and stuff. So because, you know, it's sort of like, you know, Brian and gang had the trust in us to say, I know that these guys will be able to grow into this position, you know, which is incredibly, you know, incredibly encouraging, incredibly motivating too. You know, when you think like, I have to do this, I've never done this before, but he's trusting me to do that. And he thinks I can do it. So it's like, you know, you very well, just will go to the wall for that, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why, like you said, with hiring, you know, in a lot of ways, it's almost more important to hire for someone who's a culture fit and who has the right attitude, you know, right, as opposed to just specific skills, you know, because specific skills can be learned to a certain extent, not totally, you know, but I think that's why it's so important, you know, find people who are willing to work hard, who fit your ideals, you know, who exhibit the behaviors that you want. Because some of the specifics can be taught, but some of those other things, you know, are a little bit harder to, I guess, to instill in people if they don't have them already.
So let me leave our audience with a sort of overall closing lesson, and that is celebrate your successes, but move on. Move on, because like I think you kind of alluded to this before, it's like you will win and that success will wear off, and you realize that you still have to get up out of your bed. You still have to go to work, and you know, you still have to continue to do the things you need to do. And you know, Elizabeth Gilbert, is that her? Yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert, a gal who wrote "Eat, Pray, Love." Is that it?
Yes.
Right. So she has a great little TED talk, and she says, "Hey, my book might be the most wonderful thing I've ever done and ever will do. I may have to live in that shadow for the rest of my life. I may never, ever, ever, ever top it off again. Yet I still have to go out there and work because I love the work and I love the creativity." So a lot of times we have to do, you know, we celebrate, but then we move on and we keep on trying to add to that win column.
Yep. That's where maintaining your humility is so important. You know,
that's right.
You gotta take pride in your successes, of course, but you know, then you gotta learn whatever lessons, take it forward, and move on to the next one.
That's right.
All right, man. Well, I enjoyed this little 2-part series. Hopefully, the audience did too, and hopefully you did as well.
Yeah, I did too. This was a great stuff. And let us know if you enjoyed it, and if you did not enjoy it, we'd love to hear from you either way.
Yes, either way. You can tweet me at Jared Morris, tweet Damien at Damien Farnworth, and we'll be back. So just to give listeners a quick preview of what's to come actually with The Lead, Damien, since things will change a little bit, we have actually a series of interviews coming up. We're going to be interviewing several of the speakers at Authority Rainmaker, so Dan Pink and Sally Hogshead and Bernadette Jiwa. We're going to be doing some really good interviews with them, so you'll start to see those come over the next few weeks. And then there is a podcast project that is in the works. We don't want to give away too much, but The Lead will be a part of that. It's certainly going to be staying. You and I will continue to host it. And we're really going to be focusing in, zeroing in on using The Lead to bring some old copy blogger concepts and lessons back up to the front, because we know how easy it is for stuff to get lost in the archives.
That's right.
So, you know, we want to use The Lead as a way to deliver that content to people in a different way than you've had it presented before, both in case you like consuming it in a different way, and in case you missed it or forgot about it. So you'll start to see those episodes of The Lead in the future as well, which I'm very much looking forward to.
I am too. It's great, Jared.
All right. Good to talk to you, Damien, and we will talk to you all in a couple weeks. If you did enjoy this episode, if you enjoyed our last episode, and if you enjoy what Damien and I are doing, we would definitely appreciate a rating or a review on iTunes. They help out a lot. And don't forget to go to authorityrainmaker.com. Really hoping to see a lot of you there. It would be great to connect with the people who are listening to The Lead, to the people who are reading the content on CopyBlogger. As I told you at the intro to this episode, that was my favorite part about last year's conference. And so I hope to be able to do that and do much more of it at this year's conference. So authorityrainmaker.com, all the details are right there. All right. Thank you again for listening. We will be back in a couple weeks with a new episode of The Lead, and we will talk to you then. Bye.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. Lord, have mercy on my rough and rough.